This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You've reached another Joy 94.9 podcast.
The hottest event on the LGBTIQ calendar is the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras.
And this way it is through Joy.
Thanks to our Joy sponsors, Virgin Australia, who'll fly you there, Airbnb, who'll put you up for your stay, and GoGet, who'll drive you around in style.
Then have the time of your life celebrating the Mardi Gras Parade with a view money can't buy at the Joy 94.9 VIP broadcast.
An unforgettable experience you don't want to miss.
For a chance to win, donate $5 to Joy via joy.org.au.
Enter as many times as you like. There's no limits.
The more times you donate $5, the more chances you have to win.
But do it before Feb 17.
D's and C's apply. See joy.org.au.
The joy of summer.
The joy of Mardi Gras.
Joy 94.9.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine every Saturday 10 till 12.
It's my pleasure to welcome to the studio Kimberly Kitching, new senator. Now, you replaced Stephen Conroy.
I did.
And Stephen never came on air. He would never agree to come on air. So you're already more than one up on him.
Well, I think I always say that I am, you know, have there are big muddy soccer boots of Stephen's to fill. But I think it's, you know, obviously political parties need to have new people come through.
Yes.
And Stephen made that decision, so...
I have no problem. When he was minister, he didn't give us a Zach.
I just said to your treasurer in the foyer that he should send me a letter and I'll refer it on to the Senate Communications Committee.
There you go. can I agree with you, though, Macca? Stephen Conroy, I had to battle to get him on.
Mm.
I wanted him to talk about the National Broadband Network, and he didn't want to because the costs had just blown out yet again.
Yep.
This is back when Labor was in power. And finally we got him on. He said, it's so good to be here. I've been so looking forward to this. And I felt like saying, you liar. You know, you've been dragged in here kicking and screaming.
Anyway. Look, I'm not going to... I've got one other little really quick story about Stephen. I actually saved his ass at an international airport when his baggage was lost. And to his, much to his disgust, he told the baggage people who he was. And they went, and? Right? Whereas... my actual free and fly status was much higher, and I went over and spoke to someone else, and they got his bags. So, you know, they thought he didn't matter, which was a huge shock to Stephen, that, you know, people weren't falling about looking for his bags.
Are you saying that soft diplomacy works and that Stephen is not a practitioner of that?
Yeah.
So diplomatically said.
But anyway, you're now in the Senate.
So, Kimberly, how did you get into the Senate? Because I don't recall voting for you or seeing your name on the ballot paper.
Well, in the ALP, upper house pre-selection, so the Senate pre-selections are decided by the quite... Stalinist named Public Office Selection Committee, and it makes a decision. And when someone resigns from the Senate, it is that body that makes a decision, and it is a representative body, so it's decided, so it's elected from the delegates to the ALP State Conference.
So it's an ALP committee?
It's an ALP committee, and it's representative of the delegates to that conference.
So, Senator, is that how Bob Carr got parachuted in? I forget who he replaced, but you know, suddenly he was the ex-Premier of New South Wales.
Yes.
And next he was the Foreign Minister, yes. Just like that.
Well, he became a Senator and then I guess the Foreign Minister after that, he was given that portfolio. But, the ALP, that is what happened. So, and obviously it then goes to a joint sitting in Victoria. Queensland, for example, is a unicameral house, so... but the state parliaments then convene and put your name forward to the Governor-General.
By the way, do you know Bob Carr personally?
I have met Bob Carr, but a long time ago.
Is it true that he loves to tell anecdotes about, you know, when he wants to explain a point, he'll always have a tale from, you know, ancient Greece or ancient Rome, and he might even do it in Greek or Latin to explain the point?
I haven't heard him speak Greek or Latin, and I would take note of that because I actually did classics at high school and then some at university. But I think, he's written a book, hasn't he? His anecdotes and the... You know,
self-published, I believe.
No, I think he managed to find a publisher.
I was going to say, if Bob was a freelance journalist, he'd be very wealthy because they get paid by the word.
Yes, but I mean, you know, obviously some of his views would be at odds with others in the ALP.
Tell me, the current Senate's very interesting. I mean, you've got my predecessor on 3AW, Darren Hinch, has popped up in there, and obviously Pauline Hanson's been re-elected, and... you know, Corey Bernardi's doing his thing. I mean, it must make it interesting to go to work.
Tell us, what's it like?
So, look, I've been involved in politics for a long time, and in fact, the building where you are in Bourke Street was obviously formerly the Melbourne City Council, an office building of the council. I was elected on the Melbourne City Council when John Soh was first Lord Mayor. So I've been involved for a long time. But, look, you know, it's such a privilege, and it is such an amazing place to be. And this week...
we're talking about the Senate here.
Yes, it really is. I mean, how lucky am I that I get to go there, and I think I'm the 591st senator in Australia's history, and it's a privilege. And... you know, I just hope that I do the best job I can. But there are moments of surrealness, can I say. So this week, listening to Corey Bernardi give his speech on Tuesday, I thought, you know, because normally I would have been watching that on television. Yeah. So to be in the chamber listening to that was very interesting. And
in the Labor Party, were you sort of fist-pumping when Corey said, I'm leaving the Liberal Party, it's not conservative enough for me? I mean, yeah, you must have sort of been secretly
Well, of
quite
course,
pleased.
it does create a lot of I think it does create problems for the government because I'm not sure, you know, their base is broad, and Corey says that he represents some of that base. You know, I mean, obviously, they will have problems. They'll have another crossbencher to deal with. The crossbench is already, as we've also seen this week, the crossbench is willing to move even after they've given commitment. So your former colleague did that this week. And so these are it's a very lively place. And I think, I mean, one of the reasons I guess, interested in what Corey has done is I recently read a book called Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance, which is, I think, gives some insight into President Trump's victory.
It's a good book, isn't it?
It is. I think it's a... Well, I am thinking through the lessons that book might...
So you're saying South Australians are hillbillies?
I see.
Well, one would say... Well, I should say that, you know, I think it is... Well, I think that there is a certain... I mean, South Australia needs, you know, some industry, and whether those defence jobs, the submarine jobs, actually come through for them in the numbers that the federal government and particularly Christopher Pyne has said that they will is very interesting, because if you read the Élysée Palace press releases, so the French government's press releases, you will see that, in fact, the job numbers do not correspond.
Yeah.
So for South Australia, I think that's a very live issue.
And, of course, a nuclear submarine, they're going to convert to diesel and they're going to build it in South Australia. It makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
And what about First Nation? Talk to us about what it's like to...
So One Nation. well, I come from Queensland originally.
Oh, dear.
I think she's probably learnt a lot this time around. Mm. And... they are probably more astute, I would say. Although I did love on Tuesday when the Senate first sat on Tuesday this week, Rod Cullerton was up in the public gallery.
Yes. Mm. And down here, sitting in my side with that seat.
I have to say, if Pauline Hanson's, if looks could kill, he would have been flayed across those Senate seats.
I read recently, though, that in far north Queensland, FNQ, at a particular restaurant, one week Jonathan Thurston, the... you know, NRL Premiership, North Queensland Cowboy Rugby League player, he turned up and it was just like, you know, God had arrived. But a week later, Pauline Hanson turned up, same reaction. Mm-hmm. You know, Jonathan Thurston, Pauline Hanson, both considered demigods in that part of the world.
I think the polling, I think both parties in Queensland shows that she will do quite well.
Mm.
And I think it's interesting given that people, when they are polled, are saying that they will vote for her, because that's another change. So in the past, sometimes people might not have said that. So this becomes an interesting, becomes interesting for both parties, I think, in Queensland about how they deal with that and how they... It's actually not that. It's actually deeper, I think, more fundamental than that. It's about how they assuage the concerns of voters, because obviously there is a disconnect there. Because in the past, people would have voted for mainstream political parties far more readily than they are doing now. And I think we'll see in WA in the state election there on March the 11th, we'll see how she goes there. Mm. And in fact, someone said to me the other day she'll probably win some upper house seats.
Well, of course, we did interview Pauline. We had her for half an hour. Which caused a little bit of a commotion.
It certainly did. We lost some friends and we actually made some friends.
Well, I like to think that Australia is a pluralistic society. So I think that you don't have to agree with someone, but we're pretty lucky to live in a democracy.
Oh, free speech is an interesting concept, but not everyone gets it.
Well, yes, and that's right. And I mean, the reason I think we should, you know, value that even more is because we have now seen in some areas, some countries in the world where free speech, you cannot... You know, you cannot have free speech. You cannot be whom you are. The very essence of a person, because you know you'll be thrown off the top of a building if you're unlucky enough to live in Syria.
And some people believe that free speech means you can go around slagging people and hurting
people. We don't really have the free speech, because speech, of course, is limited by the laws we all agree on, which is sort of defamation.
There's got to be respect.
Yes,
and there has to be respect.
Absolutely, there must be respect.
Actually, we should send Ross Cameron and Larry Pickering to a respect course. What do you reckon, Tom?
I personally believe in free speech as well, because, I mean, being in talkback radio, I can tell you it's all comers. We don't really vet callers that much. We'll chop them off if people go too far. And there's a lot of politicians, can I say, some of your colleagues, Senator, who just cannot handle that. Like, they do not like hearing what the public has to say, even though every few years they seek votes from those same people. I think it's a great proving ground for politicians.
But you've got to have respect, Tom.
Yes, but I mean, does Malcolm Turnbull respect Bill Shorten at the moment?
No,
probably
no,
not. You know, okay.
Well,
versa.
I think it was actually worse than that. Mm. Someone who created tens of thousands of jobs, Australian jobs, Richard Pratt. He also in that diatribe. A very immature diatribe, I would say.
And also to bring someone in who's been dead for, 8 years now.
Yes.
I mean, he's got no chance to defend himself.
Yes. Kimberley Kitching, we've talked a little bit about how the, you know, joining the Senate is and all that, and slagged a few people off, or we have anyway. But I'm now interested, the Senate inquiry...
Into marriage equality.
Into marriage equality. And first off, I want to say, I am so glad... that the plebiscite didn't happen for one reason. The legislation that the government would have presented to make, had that plebiscite been passed, was and is a bloody disgrace. George Brandis, mate, you know, you can't even spell equality. The government, this legislation is the most appalling piece of trash that I've seen come from parliamentary draftsmen in many years.
Was it the wording?
It was the wording and the intent.
Do you think Mac has expressed his feelings coherently?
Anyway, I have some idea what he feels.
George Brandis, an act of bastardry, and you've done a few. You should be ashamed of yourself. The sooner you go off and be an ambassador to some country that has to endure
apparently
you, the better.
Apparently he wants a position with tenure, so he might try to become a member of the judiciary.
Oh,
it's funny though, because one of my best friends is gay, and I asked him what he thought about the plebiscite, and he said, "Oh, I think it's a good idea. You know, prove once and for all that the majority of the population is in support." So
we would have got a result, Tom. That legislation would have been a disgrace.
Tom, we've been through this, but the key argument against it is that it legitimises
hate
and discriminatory behaviour.
I know. But earlier in the program, I said that what I want governments to do, even if you don't agree with what they're doing, is to, if they make a promise, is to carry through with that promise.
Yes.
And I get that a lot of people were against it, but it was a promise that a small majority of people voted in favour of. And that's why I think... And the fact is, you know what...
But as we discussed earlier on, Tom, sometimes it's important to actually move your position on things...
True, all right.
..based on public sentiment and the feeling of the community.
But
see, I mean...
All right, but Turnbull couldn't have done that. Anyway, the point is, though...
Well, he could.
Had it gone ahead, you'd probably have legalised gay marriage by now.
But, I mean, what does... I think that this is part of this. So what does Malcolm Turnbull actually stand for? What is the point of changing from Tony Abbott to Malcolm Turnbull...
Nothing.
..when he actually has... does not have the courage of his convictions and actually cannot because his own party won't support that.
And read the draft of the bill, Tom. Read the draft of the bill.
Well, it's academic now.
Yeah,
isn't it?
But this is what they...
No, but it's a reflection of the underlying values.
Yeah, this is what
those
people. This is what they wanted as the framework for marriage equality. Anyway, Kimberly,
tell
please.
Us about the inquiry.
Yeah, tell us about the inquiry.
So the Senate decided to have a select committee to look at the same... So exemptions that would be available to discrimination law under an amended Marriage Act or it would be something like the Same-Sex Marriage Act. So there was an exposure draft put out and the committee was asked to look at the exemptions particularly. So if I can sort of group them, we looked at... So we received over 4,000 submissions, which I thought was pretty amazing given that... We opened, I think they were opened in sort of late December and we closed them January 13 and then so that we could have 3 days of hearing. So, and some of those...
What, was that done deliberately
yeah,
in the hope that you wouldn't get any submissions? I mean, who Boxing Day and...
Well, so people had approximately a month, but we were aware that we needed to report in February. So we needed to give people enough. And what we did do was say, look, if you put in a draft submission, we'll accept... a submission later on from you.
There's a football club I support where they've got a contentious board election coming out. They have the meeting of the 23rd of December in the hope that no one will turn up.
Sounds like a racing club.
But so people did put in draft submissions and, in fact, we kept on accepting submissions. So as people came to give...
So what are the exemptions? I mean, things like religious schools and so forth?
So there's the exemptions for ministers of religion, which already exist. There's proposed exemptions for... those would be extended to civil religious celebrants. I'm just going to broadly categorise them and then sort of drill down a little bit. And then there's the goods and services. So, for example, is a church hall... So when people think about an exemption for religious bodies, do they think of just in front of the altar or do they think, well, I'd like to hire that church hall... Is that included, for example?
And
there
was a famous case, I think, in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, the Ashes Bakery case.
Yeah, wouldn't make a cake.
Well, so I think that's an interesting... So that's different. So that's a commercial goods or service. So should they... And there's cases in America. So there's a florist's...
Yeah.
Who was asked to provide flowers for a same-sex marriage. And she, even though the customer had been a long-term customer, she said, look, I don't feel comfortable. And she was taken to a discrimination tribunal. A couple of weeks ago, I think the appeal was heard. So she's appealed that, but we don't know the decision on that.
Kind of silly. I've got a friend who's a very popular best man. He makes a good speech and looks good in a suit and generally is a popular dance partner. And he also reckons he could tell if a marriage is going to succeed or fail just by what he sees on the wedding day. I wonder if he should be allowed to say, look, I'm sorry, you two. It's quite clear this is not going to
work.
I'm going to protest against this marriage.
It could be a whole new career line.
Yes.
So, Kimberly, what's the committee going to actually say?
Well, I think I'll start by saying the committee represents very broad views. So you would have, you've got the Greens, Labor Left, Labor Moderate, probably Left Liberal, Conservative Liberal and the Nats.
With all these factions.
Well, I'm sure this isn't a surprise to you, Tom, that the Liberal Party has has groupings. So the committee is broadly represents obviously the views in society as well. Let's say so. I think there's been general consensus and probably considerable consensus at the hearing. So the testimony we've heard about the exemptions for ministers for religion. There has been some discussion around civil celebrants. So obviously civil celebrants are licensed by the state. Should they, if the law of this land changes, should they be compelled then to follow the law?
But most civil celebrants I know struggle to get enough work to keep home and hearth together. I very much doubt any of them would be knocking back any, whether it's a gay marriage or not.
Well, there are 539 what they call independent religious celebrants. So how would they be classified? Should they be classified differently from other civil celebrants, or should there be a grandfathering? So let's say you get your licence while under the law as it is now, you're happy to do that, but you don't want to do a same-sex wedding. Maybe that should be grandfathered, so the next time you have to renew your licence...
Can you say you don't want to do a heterosexual wedding?
No. I mean, that's right. So these are
exactly the point, Macca.
If I could ask you, Kimberly, and it's not directed at you personally. Mm. When did you realise you were straight? People would never dare ask that question.
I mean, there were certainly some. So we heard from the civil celebrants as well. Their peak associations.
Are we getting an answer for that?
What? When I knew that I was straight.
She knows.
We might ask you the same question, Tom.
Yeah.
I think you should go first.
It's funny. My father, no, actually my mother thought that I was gay when I was young because I liked reading books. This was the 1970s. Because I preferred books to sport.
You're a book puff.
Yeah. So I don't know if that counts.
Let's...
My mother's dead now, so she can't either prove or disprove that point.
I would have loved to have heard what your father said when your mother said, I think you do.
Well, no, Dad was far more concerned that he thought I'd gone, in his view, a bit left-winged at university, and he said, we'll have to knock the communism out of you.
Well, look at Rupert Murdoch. He was a socialist at university.
Well, you know the old saying, if you're not a socialist when you're 20, you have no heart, and if you're not a... capitalist when you're 40, you have no brains.
Exactly.
Now, Kimberly, what's the report going to tell us?
Yeah, come on.
So I think, well, I can't, I've got a confidential chair's report, but we are having a meeting on Monday for a couple of hours, and very teasingly, I've actually brought that into the studio, so I may not make it out.
No, we want to actually break your arm.
Yeah, we'll have a bit of an old factional brawl. Right.
But I think there's general consensus on some of the points, and certainly what we're trying to do is to come up with a consensus report, because that is a far more powerful instrument than having a majority report and a minority report.
In all seriousness, I see all this work you're doing, and I think that's great, but the... government's legislation stalled. I know that the Greens and other groups every now and then throw something into the Senate and then it just stops because the government won't pass it. I mean, are you doing this work because you expect there'll be another genuine attempt to introduce a bill into the lower house?
And that's why I'm saying I think it's important to have a consensus report, because I think it then enables people mostly in the Liberal Party room, to actually say, well, look, this has been done.
Because there's rumours there'll be a conscience vote. I mean, Turnbull will somehow, get this through.
Yeah, and I think there's been different... there's certainly different views about whether Liberal MPs are able to have one now because they've already voted for the plebiscite. Was that the commitment that they gave? Are they now able to exercise a free vote now, because they did that in 2015, I think it was. So, can they do that now, or do they have to still toe the line and they won't actually, they'll be bound? So, and, in the Liberal Party, National Party coalition agreement, does it when then Prime Minister Abbott brought in the National Party, does the National Party...
That was branch stacking, wasn't it?
Well, it was kind of, it was... I couldn't possibly comment on the Liberal Party caucus.
We've actually got very, very short time. If I can ask, the committee you're going to bring down, or are you going to... So let's get you back.
I'd love to come back.
Once the report is tabled and we can have a chat about it, and we'll get you in again, Tom. You can be our muse.
Super. But before you do go... What's the feeling? What's the feeling in the House in Canberra at the moment? Is the door opening to a free vote?
So I would say amongst the Conservative politicians that there's a feeling that this is going to happen, and that they would like to ensure that some comfort is given perhaps to their base or, you know, so religious exemptions. And in fact, I have to say that the testimony and the submissions we received from the gay and lesbian community were certainly... were okay with that. In the, I would say the majority of them are absolutely fine about that.
I just don't want a church wedding.
So
it's just a franchise dispute.
We want a legal contract, which is what marriage is all about. So it's a legal contract between two consenting adults.
Yeah.
You know who married me and my wife? Greg Evans of Perfect Match. I kid you
not. Really?
In a nightclub.
That sounds like an excellent wedding.
Elise, I'm very surprised.
He said his biggest regret was when they trashed the show, Dexter the robot ended up in a dumpster. And he realised now he should have rescued Dexter and used him as part of the as part of his marriage celebrant shtick.
Well, Dexter could have got pre-selection.
Kimberly, we've just had another request that we need to get you back in to talk about 18C and racial discrimination as well. So maybe we need to get you in for
a
whole day.
And we'll have you, Tom. We won't have we'll have Tom for that. We have to go. We've got some messages. Kimberly Kitching, thank you very, very much.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.